Chapter 117. Front suspension and service. Front suspension types. Solid axles. Early cars and trucks used a solid, or straight, front axle to support the front wheels. See Figure 117-1. A solid axle front suspension is very strong and is still being used in the manufacture of medium and heavy trucks. The main disadvantage of solid axle design is its lack of ride quality. When one wheel hits a bump or dip in the road, the forces are transferred through the axle to the opposite wheel. Solid axles are currently used in the rear of most vehicles. Kingpins. At the end of many solid I-beam or tube axles are kingpins that allow the front wheels to rotate for steering. Kingpins are hardened steel pins that attach the steering knuckle to the front axle, allowing the front wheels to move for steering. Kingpins usually have grease fittings to lubricate the kingpin bushings. Failure to keep these bushings lubricated with chassis grease can cause wear and free play or can cause the pins to become galled, or seized or frozen, resulting in hard steering and or loud noise while turning. See Figure 117-2. Twin I-beams. A twin I-beam front suspension was used for over 30 years on Ford pickup trucks and vans, beginning in the mid-1960s. Strong steel twin beams that cross provide independent front suspension operation with the strength of a solid front axle. Early versions of the twin I-beam systems used kingpins, while later models used ball joints to support the steering knuckle and spindle. Coil springs are usually used on twin I-beam suspensions, even though the original design and patent used leaf springs. See Figure 117-3. To control longitudinal, or front-to-back, support, a radius rod is attached to each beam and is anchored to the frame of the truck using rubber bushings. These bushings allow the front axle to move up and down while still insulating road noise and vibration from the frame and body. Refer to Figure 117-1. Most early vehicles used single straight axles. Refer to Figure 117-2. Typical kingpin used with a solid axle. Refer to Figure 117-3. Twin I-beam front suspension. Rubber bushings are used to support the I-beams to the frame and help isolate road noise. Tech tip. Radius rod bushing noise. When the radius rod bushing on a Ford truck or van deteriorates, the most common complaint from the driver is noise. See Figure 117-4. Besides causing tire wear, worn or defective radius rod bushing can cause the following. Number 1. A clicking sound when braking, it sounds as if the brake caliper may be loose. Number 2. A clunking noise when hitting bumps. When the bushing deteriorates, the axles move forward and backward with less control. Noise is the first sign that something is wrong. Without proper axle support, handling and cornering can also be affected. Short-long arm suspensions. Terminology. The short-long arm suspension uses a short upper control arm and a longer lower control arm and is usually referred to as the SLA type suspension. The two main links in a short-long arm abbreviated, SLA, suspension are the upper control arm and the lower control arm. The upper control arm is shorter than the lower one. See Figure 117-5. This type of suspension system goes by a variety of names, including unequal arm suspension, double wishbone suspension, or A-arm suspension. Unequal arm refers to the fact that the two arms are of different lengths, while double wishbone and A-arm derive from the shape of the arms, which are frequently triangular with one mounting point at the knuckle and two at the frame. When an SLA suspension uses a straight, two-point lower control arm, there is almost always a strut rod that braces the lower arm against the frame. The strut rod can attach to the frame at a point either forward or to the rear of the control arm. Refer to Figure 117-4. The rubber radius rod bushing absorbs road shocks and helps isolate road noise. Refer to Figure 117-5. Upper control arm though. Refer to Figure 117-6. A typical SLA front suspension using coil springs. Strut rods. A strut rod, also called a reaction rod, provides support to the axle during braking and acceleration forces. Using a strut rod provides triangulation between the wheel and the frame. Triangulation means that the front suspension has a three-point brace that resists forces from every direction while still allowing the wheels to pivot on the steering axis. Coil spring front suspension. Locating the coil spring on the lower control arm is the most common SLA type suspension configuration. See Figure 117-6. The upper control arm is A-shaped, with two mounting points at the frame side member and one at the steering knuckle. The inboard ends of the arm attach to a pivot bar that is rigidly bolted to the frame, and the outboard end connects to the steering knuckle with a ball joint. Bushings between the inner arm mounts and the pivot bar allow the arm to swing vertically. The lower control arm is also A-shaped with two inboard pivot mounts and a ball joint connection at the knuckle. Bolts attach the inboard ends of the lower arm to brackets that extend from the bottom of the frame cross member. Bushings on the inboard mounts allow the arm to pivot vertically. The coil springs seat between the lower control arm and a bracket below the frame side member. The shock absorber attaches to the lower control arm and the frame side member. In a typical coil spring on the upper control arm design, a portion of the unit body wheel well is reinforced to withstand spring force and act as the upper spring seats. See Figure 117-7. The Figure 117-7. An SLA type suspension with a coil spring placed on top of the upper control arm. Torsion bar front suspension. Short long arm suspensions use longitudinal torsion bars, especially in trucks. The forward end of the torsion bar has external splines and shares the spline socket of the torque arm with the control arm through a bolt. Because the torque arm is rigidly bolted to the control arm, motion transfers to the torsion bar whenever the control arm pivots. The torsion bar extends rearward from the control arm and connects to an anchor arm that attaches to a frame cross member. The torsion bar splines to the anchor arm and the anchor arm is secured to the frame by a bolt and adjusting nut. The adjusting nut varies the spring force of the torsion bar to establish the ride height of the vehicle. See Figure 117-8. Refer to Figure 117-8. A torsion bar SLA suspension can use either the lower or the upper control arm. Frequently asked question. What is a coilover shock suspension? In some applications, the spring and shock absorber are combined to fit within the upper and lower A-arms. This makes for a simple and lightweight front-type suspension and is used in a variety of vehicles including light pickup trucks. See Figure 117-9. Strut suspension. Parts and operation. Strut suspension can be of several types. A McPherson strut includes the suspension spring that transfers the weight of the body to the wheel. A McPherson strut is the main, load-carrying suspension spring. See Figure 117-10. Figure 117-9. An SLA type suspension that uses a coil-over shock assembly. A McPherson strut typically incorporates an upper and a lower spring seat, a shock absorber mount and dust cap, a dust cover for the piston rod, and a bump stop. The upper mount secures the upper spring seat to the strut tower. A rubber bushing at the top of the strut absorbs vibrations. In most applications, a bearing on the top of a front-wheel strut allows it to rotate on the vertical steering axis without rubbing against the strut tower when the steering knuckle turns. The lower spring seat is attached to the strut casing. The piston rod dust cover is similar to the dust cover on a conventional shock absorber, and a bump stop at the top of the piston rod keeps the strut from bottoming out during suspension jounce. A modified strut does not include a spring as part of the assembly. See Figure 117-11. A modified strut is used on the rear of some GM vehicles. Except for the lack of a spring and spring seats, the construction and function of a modified strut are basically the same as those of a McPherson strut. When used on the front suspension, a modified strut also rotates on the steering axis when the wheels turn. A multi-link front suspension uses two control arms as well as a structural strut assembly. This type of suspension is also called a strut SLA or long spindle, and short long arm suspension. See Figure 117-13. Frequently asked question. What is a hyperstrut? Some 2012 and newer General Motors vehicles use a type of strut that uses an upper ball joint as a steering pivot rather than the top of the strut. The advantage of the hyperstrut front suspension over the McPherson type wheel suspension is a shorter wheel spindle length. See Figure 117-12. The advantages of this design compared to a conventional McPherson strut include: reduced torque steer. Improved impact isolation on bumps and rough surfaces. Enables the use of bigger wheels. Allows camber adjustment with screws on the steering knuckle upper ball stud. Refer to Figure 117-10. A typical McPherson strut showing all of the components of the assembly. A strut includes the shock and the spring in one structural assembly. Refer to Figure 117-11. The modified strut front suspension is similar to a McPherson strut suspension except that the coil spring is seated on the lower control arm and is not part of the strut assembly. Servicing the suspension system. Suspension systems are designed and manufactured to provide years of trouble-free service with a minimum amount of maintenance. In fact, the suspension system is often not noticed at all by the driver because the vehicle rides and handles as expected. It is when the driver notices that the vehicle is not riding or handling as it did, or should, that a technician is asked to repair or align the vehicle and fix the problem. The smart technician should always road test any vehicle before and after servicing. See Tech Tip for details. The purpose of any diagnosis is to eliminate known good components. See the suspension problem symptom chart for a list of components that can cause the problem or customer complaint. Caution: more than one factor may be the cause of a problem. Be sure to inspect all suspension components and repair all parts that are worn or damaged. Failure to do so may allow the problem to reoccur and cause premature failure of other suspension components. Refer to Figure 117-12. The hyper strut, left, compared to the traditional McPherson strut, right. Refer to Figure 117-13. A typical multi-link front suspension system. Road test diagnosis. If possible, perform a road test of the vehicle with the owner of the vehicle. It is also helpful to have the owner drive the vehicle. While driving, try to determine when and where the noise or problem occurs, such as the following. Number 1. In cold or warm weather. Number 2. With cold or warm engine or vehicle. And number 3. While turning, left only, right only. A proper road test for any suspension system problem should include the following. Number 1. Drive beside parked vehicles. Any noise generated by the vehicle's suspension or tires is reflected off solid objects, such as a row of parked vehicles along a street. For best results, drive with the windows down and drive close to the parked vehicles or a retaining wall on the left side. Repeat the drive for the right side. Defective wheel bearings or power steering pumps usually make noise and can be heard during this test. Number 2. Drive into driveways. Suspension problems often occur when turning at the same time the suspension hits a bump. This action is best repeated by driving slowly into a driveway with a curb. The curb causes the suspension to compress while the wheels are turned. See the case study titled The Rock Hard Problem for an example. Defective stabilizer bar bushings, control arm bushings, and ball joints will usually make noise during this test procedure. Number 3. Drive in reverse while turning. This technique is usually used to find possible defective outer constant velocity joints, abbreviated CV, used on the drive axle shaft of front-wheel drive vehicles. This technique also forces the suspension system to work in reverse of normal. Any excessive clearances in the suspension system are reversed and often make noise or cause a vibration during the test. Besides defective CV joints, this test can often detect worn control arm bushings, ball joints, stabilizer bar bushings, or links. This test can also detect defective or worn steering system components such as an idler arm, tire rod end, or center link. And number 4. Drive over a bumpy road. Worn or defective suspension and steering components can cause the vehicle to bounce or dart side to side while traveling over bumps and dips in the road. Worn or defective ball joints, control arm bushings, stabilizer bar bushings, stabilizer bar links, or worn shock absorbers can be the cause. Once the problem has been confirmed, a further inspection can be performed in the service bay. Refer to Chart 117-1. Suspension problem symptom and possible causes. Dry park test, suspension. A dry park test can also be used to help locate worn or defective suspension components. The dry park test is performed by having an assistant move the steering wheel side to side while feeling and observing for any free play in the steering or suspension. For best results, the vehicle should be on a level floor or on a drive-on type hoist with the front wheels pointing straight ahead. In this suspension analysis using the dry park test, the technician should observe the following for any noticeable play or unusual noise. Number 1. Front wheel bearings. Loose or defective wheel bearings are often overlooked as a possible cause of poor handling or darting vehicle performance. Number 2. Control arm bushing wear or movement. Check for any abnormal movement in upper control arm bushings or lower control arm bushings. And number 3. Ball joint movement. Check for any noticeable play or noise from both load carrying and follower type ball joints on both sides of the vehicle. Note, the dry park test, and many other chassis system tests, relies on the experience of the technician to be able to judge normal wear from abnormal wear. It is extremely important that all beginning technicians work closely with an experienced technician to gain this knowledge. Tech tip: road test, before and after. Many times, technicians will start to work on a vehicle based on the description of the problem by the driver or owner. A typical conversation was overheard where the vehicle owner complained that the vehicle handled funny, especially when turning. The owner wanted a wheel alignment, and the technician and shop owner wanted the business. The vehicle was aligned, but the problem was still present. The real problem was a defective tire. The service technician should have road tested the vehicle before any service work was done to confirm the problem and try to determine its cause. Every technician should test drive the vehicle after any service work is performed to confirm that the service work was performed correctly and that the customer complaint has been resolved. This is especially true for any service work involving the steering, suspension, or braking systems. Refer to Figure 117-14. A leaking strut. Either a cartridge insert or the entire strut will require replacement. If a light film of oil is seen, this is to be considered normal. If oil is dripping, then this means that the rod seal has failed. Visual inspection. All suspension components should be carefully inspected for signs of wear or damage. A thorough visual inspection should include checking all of the following. Number 1. Shock absorbers and struts. See Figure 117-14. Number 2. Springs. See Figure 117-15. Number 3. Stabilizer bar links. Number 4. Stabilizer bar bushings. Number 5. Upper and lower shock absorber mounting points. Number 6. Bump stops. Number 7. Body to chassis mounts. And number 8. Engine and transmission, or transaxle, mounts. 9. Suspension arm bushings. See Figure 117-16. Alignment equipment and procedures can often determine if a suspension component is bent or has been moved out of position. A careful visual inspection can often reveal suspected damaged components by observing scrape marks or rusty sections that could indicate contact with the road or another object. While an assistant bounces the vehicle up and down, check to see if there is any free play in any of the suspension components. Refer to Figure 117-15. This front coil spring looks as if it has been heated with a torch in an attempt to lower the ride height of the vehicle. Both front springs will require replacement. Refer to Figure 117-16. It is easy to see that this worn control arm bushing needs to be replaced. The new bushing is shown next to the original. Ball joints. Diagnosis and inspection. The life of ball joints depends on driving conditions, vehicle weight, and lubrication. Even with proper care and lubrication, the load-carrying, weight-carrying, ball joints wear more than the follower ball joints. Ball joints should be replaced in pairs, both lower or both upper, to ensure the best handling. Defective or worn ball joints can cause looseness in the suspension and the following common driver complaints. Number 1. Loud popping or squeaking whenever driving over curbs, such as into a driveway. Number 2. Shimmy-type vibration felt in the steering wheel. Number 3. Vehicle wander or a tendency not to track straight. And number 4. Excessive free play in the steering wheel. A ball joint inspection should also be done when an alignment is performed or as part of any other comprehensive vehicle inspection. Many load-carrying ball joints have wear indicators with a raised area around the grease fitting, called indicator ball joints. See Figures 117-17 and 117-18. Always check wear indicator type ball joints with the wheels of the vehicle on the ground. If the raised area around the grease fitting is flush or recessed with the surrounding area, the ball joint is worn more than 0.050 of an inch and must be replaced. Note: most ball joints must be replaced if the joint has more than 0.050 of an inch axial, up and down, movement. To help visualize this distance, consider that the thickness of an American nickel coin is about 0.060 inch. It is helpful to know that maximum wear should be less than the thickness of a nickel. There are dial indicators, gauges, available that screw into the grease fitting hole of the ball joint that can accurately measure the wear. See Figure 117-19. To perform a proper non-indicator type ball joint inspection, the force of the vehicle's springs must be unloaded from the ball joint. If this force is not relieved, the force of the spring pushes the ball and socket joint tightly together and any wear due to movement will not be detected. Note: the location of the load-carrying ball joint is closest to the seat of the spring or torsion bar. If the coil spring or torsion bar is attached to the lower control arm, the lower ball joint is the load-carrying ball joint. See Figure 117-20. This includes vehicles equipped with modified McPherson strut-type suspension. See Figure 117-21. Number 1. Place the jack under the lower control arm as close to the ball joint as possible and raise the wheels approximately 1 to 2 inches, or 2.5 to 5 cm, off the ground to unload the lower ball joint. Number 2. Using a pry bar under the tire, lift the wheel up. If there is excessive vertical movement in the ball joint itself, it must be replaced. Most manufacturers specify a maximum vertical play of approximately 0.050 of an inch, or 1.3 millimeters, or the thickness of a nickel. Always check the manufacturer's specifications for exact maximum allowable movement. Vertical movement of a ball joint is often called axial play because the looseness is in the same axis as the ball joint stud. To check for lateral play, grip the tire at the top and bottom and move your hands in opposite directions. Note: be sure that the cause of any free play or looseness is not due to the wheel bearing. Closely observe the exact source of the free play movement. If the coil spring is attached to the upper control arm, the upper ball joint is the load-carrying ball joint. See Figure 117-22. Number 1. Place a block of wood, 2x4 inch, between the upper control arm and the frame, or use a special tool designed for this purpose. See Figure 117-23. Number 2. Place the jack under the vehicle's frame and raise the wheel approximately 1 to 2 inches off the ground. The wood block or special tool keeps the weight of the vehicle off the upper ball joint. Number 3. Using a pry bar under the tire, lift the wheel. If there is excessive vertical movement in the ball joint itself, it must be replaced. Always check the manufacturer's specifications for exact maximum allowable movement. Follower ball joints, friction ball joints, should also be inspected while testing load-carrying ball joints. Grasp the tire at the top and the bottom and attempt to shake the wheel assembly while looking directly at the follower ball joint. Generally, there should be no lateral or axial movement at all in the follower ball joint. However, some manufacturers specify a maximum of 0.250 of an inch, or 0.6 centimeters, measured at the top of the tire. Always check the manufacturer's specifications before condemning a ball joint because of excessive play. McPherson strut-equipped vehicles do not have a load-carrying ball joint. The weight of the vehicle is carried through the upper strut mount and bearing assembly. See Figure 117-24. After checking axial play in a ball joint, grasp the tire from the side at the top and bottom and alternately push and pull. Any lateral movement at the ball joint should generally be considered a good reason to replace the ball joints. See Figure 117-25. Refer to Figure 117-17. Grease fitting projecting down from the surrounding area of a ball joint. The ball joint should be replaced when the area around the grease fitting is flush or recessed. Refer to Figure 117-18. Indicator ball joints should be checked with the weight of the vehicle on the ground. Refer to Figure 117-19. Typical dial indicator used to measure the suspension component movement. The locking pliers attach the gauge to a stationary part of the vehicle and the flexible coupling allows the dial indicator to be positioned at any angle. Refer to Figure 117-20. If the spring is attached to the lower control arm as in the Sasella suspension, the jack should be placed under the lower control arm as shown. A dial indicator should be used to measure the amount of free play in the ball joints. Be sure that the looseness being measured is not due to normal wheel bearing end play. Refer to Figure 117-21. The jack should be placed under the lower control arm of this modified McPherson type suspension. Refer to Figure 117-22. If the spring is attached to the upper control arm, the jack should be placed under the frame to check for ball joint wear. Refer to Figure 117-23. A special tool or a block of wood should be inserted between the frame and the upper control arm before lifting the vehicle off the ground. This tool stops the force of the spring against the upper ball joint so that a true test can be performed on the condition of the ball joint. Refer to Figure 117-24. The jacking point is under the frame for checking the play of a lower ball joint used with a McPherson strut. Frequently asked question: what is the difference between a low friction ball joint and a steel-on-steel ball joint? Before the late 1980s, most ball joints were constructed with a steel ball that rubbed on a steel socket. This design created friction and provided for a tight high friction joint until wear caused looseness in the joint. Newer designs use a polished steel ball that is installed in a hard plastic polymer, resulting in a low friction joint assembly. Because of the difference in friction characteristics, the vehicle may handle differently than originally designed if incorrect style ball joints are installed. Most component manufacturers state that low friction ball joints in a vehicle originally equipped with steel-on-steel high friction ball joints are usually acceptable, but high-friction replacement ball joints should be avoided on a vehicle originally equipped with low-friction ball joints. Ball joint removal. Take care to avoid damaging grease seals when separating ball joints from their mounts. The preferred method to separate tapered parts is to use a puller-type tool that applies pressure to the tapered joint as the bolt is tightened on the puller. See Figure 117-26. Sometimes the shock of a hammer can be used to separate the ball joint from the steering knuckle. For best results, another hammer should be used as a backup while striking the joint to be separated on the side with a heavy hammer. Caution: the use of tapered pickle forks should be avoided, unless the part is to be replaced, because they often damage the grease seal of the part being separated. Some ball joint studs have a slot or groove where a pinch bolt is used to hold the ball joint to the steering knuckle. See Figure 117-27. Use penetrating oil in the steering knuckle groove and rotate the knuckle several times. Do not use a hammer on the pinch bolt because this can cause damage to the bolt and the ball joint. Do not widen the slot in the steering knuckle. Once separated, check the shape of the steering knuckle. See Figure 117-28. If the pinch bolt has been deformed by over-tightening, the steering knuckle should be replaced. When removing ball joints that are riveted in place, always cut off or drill rivet heads before separating the ball joint from the spindle. This provides a more solid base to assist in removing rivets. The preferred method to remove rivets from ball joints is to center punch and drill out the center of the rivet before using a drill or an air-powered chisel to remove the rivet heads. Be careful not to drill or chisel into the control arms. See Figures 117-29 through 117-31. Press-in type ball joints are removed and installed using a special C-clamp type tool. See Figure 117-32. Note: many replacement press-in type ball joints are slightly larger in diameter, about 0.050 of an inch, or 1.3 millimeters, than the original ball joint to provide the same press fit. If the ball joints have been replaced before, then the control arm must be replaced. Avoid using heat to remove suspension or steering components. Many chassis parts use rubber and plastic that can be damaged if heated with a torch. If heat is used to remove a part, it must be replaced. For best results, try soaking with a penetrating oil and use the proper tools and procedures as specified by the manufacturer. Many vehicles are equipped with non-replaceable ball joints, and the entire control arm must be replaced if the ball joint is worn or defective. Caution: always follow manufacturer's recommended installation instructions whenever replacing any suspension or other chassis component part. Tire odd ends and ball joints use a taper to provide the attachment to other components. Whenever a nut is used to tighten a tapered part, it is important not to back off, or loosen, the nut after tightening. As the nut is being tightened, the taper is being pulled into the taper of the adjoining part. The specified torque on the nut ensures that the two pieces of the taper are properly joined. If the cotter key does not line up with the hole in the tapered stud when the nut has been properly torqued, tighten it more to line up a hole, never loosen the nut. Refer to Figure 117-25. This worn and rusty ball joint was found by moving the wheel and looking for movement in the joint. Refer to Figure 117-26. Taper breaker tool being used to separate the upper ball joint from the steering knuckle. This is especially important for vehicles equipped with aluminum alloy control arms. Refer to Figure 117-27. A pinch bolt attaches the steering knuckle to the ball joint. Remove the pinch bolt by turning the nut, not the bolt. Refer to Figure 117-28. If the pinch bolt is over-tightened, the steering knuckle can be deformed. A deformed knuckle can cause the pinch bolt to break and the ball joint could become separated from the steering knuckle. Refer to Figure 117-29. By drilling into the rivet, the holding force is released. Refer to Figure 117-30. The head of the rivet can be removed by using a large diameter drill bit as shown. Refer to Figure 117-31. A punch and a hammer being used to remove a rivet after the head has been removed. Refer to Figure 117-32. Press-in ball joints are best removed using a large C-clamp press, as shown. Case study: the rattle story. A customer complained that a rattle was heard every time the vehicle hit a bump. The noise sounded as if it came from the rear. All parts of the exhaust system and suspension system were checked. Everything seemed okay until the vehicle was raised with a frame-type hoist instead of a drive-on type. Then, whenever the right rear wheel was lifted, the noise occurred. The problem was a worn, or elongated, shock absorber mounting hole. A washer with the proper size hole was welded over the worn lower frame mount and the shock absorber was bolted back into place. The summary. The complaint: vehicle owner complained of a rattle sound from the rear suspension at times. The cause: the lower shock mount was found to be worn, or elongated, causing the noise. The correction: a steel washer was welded over the worn lower frame mount, which restored the shock mount to the correct size and solved the noise issue. Kingpin diagnosis and service. Kingpins are usually used on trucks, sport utility vehicles, and other heavy-duty vehicles. See Figure 117-33. Kingpins are designed to rotate inside kingpin bushings with a clearance between them of approximately 0.001 to 0.003 of an inch, or 0.025 to 0.075 millimeters. As wear occurs, this clearance distance increases and the kingpin becomes loose. Looseness in the kingpin causes looseness in the wheels and steering. Kingpins can also gall or seize due to lack of lubrication, resulting in very hard steering. After supporting the vehicle safely off the ground, inspect for looseness by positioning a dial gauge indicator on the extreme inside bottom of the edge of the wheel and rock the tire. If the dial indicator registers more than 1/4 inch, 6 millimeters, replace the kingpin and/or kingpin bushings. To remove a typical kingpin, follow these basic steps. Step 1. Remove the tire, brake drum, and backing plate or caliper. Step 2. Remove the lock pin. The lock pin is usually tapered with a threaded end for the nut. Drive the lock pin out with a drift, or punch. And Step 3. Remove the grease caps and drive the kingpin from the steering knuckle and axle with a hammer and a brass punch or a hydraulic press, if necessary. See Figure 117-34. To replace the kingpin bushings and/or kingpin, refer to the manufacturer's procedure and specifications. See Figure 117-35. Some bronze bushings must be sized by a reaming or honing to provide from 0.001 to 0.003 of an inch, or 0.025 to 0.075 millimeters, clearance between the kingpin and the bushing. Refer to Figure 117-34. Driving a kingpin out with a hammer. Refer to Figure 117-35. A kingpin being removed showing the worn bushing. Shock absorbers and struts. Diagnosis: shock absorber life depends on how and where the vehicle is driven. Original equipment abbreviated, OE, shock absorbers are carefully matched to the vehicle springs and bushings to provide the best ride comfort and control. As the control arm bushings and ball joints age, the energy built up in the springs of the vehicle is controlled less by the friction of these joints and bushings, requiring more control from the shock absorbers. Shock absorber action is also reduced as the seals inside wear. Replacement of shock absorbers may be required when any or all of the following symptoms appear. Number 1. Ride harshness. As the effectiveness of the shock absorber decreases, the rapid forces of the springs are not as dampened or controlled. Worn shocks can cause ride harshness and yet not cause the vehicle to bounce after hitting a bump. Number 2. Frequent bottoming out on rough roads. Shock absorbers provide a controlled movement of the axle whenever the vehicle hits a bump or dip in the road. As fluid is lost or wear occurs, the shock absorber becomes weaker and cannot resist the forces acting on the axle. The worn shock absorber can allow the spring to compress enough so that the axle contacts the jounce bumper, or bump stop, on the body or frame of the vehicle. Note: frequent bottoming out is also a symptom of reduced ride height due to sagging springs. Before replacing the shock absorbers, always check for proper ride height as specified in the vehicle service manual or any alignment specification booklet available from suppliers or companies of alignment or chassis parts and equipment. Number 3. Extended vehicle movement after driving on dips or a rise in the road. The most common shock absorber test is the bounce test. Push down on the body of the vehicle and let go, the vehicle should return to its normal ride height and stop. Worn shock absorbers can cause poor driver control due to excessive up and down suspension movements. If the vehicle continues to bounce 2 or 3 times, then the shocks or struts are worn and must be replaced. Number 4. Cuppy type tire wear. Defective shock absorbers can cause cuppy tire wear. This type of tire wear is caused by the tires bouncing up and down as it rotates. Number 5. Leaking hydraulic oil. When a shock or strut leaks oil externally, this indicates a defective seal. The shock absorber or strut cannot function correctly when low on oil inside. And Number 6. Springs and shock absorbers should be replaced in pairs. Both front or both rear shocks should be replaced together to provide the best handling and control. Note: shock absorbers do not affect ride height except where special air shocks or coil overload carrying shocks are used. If a vehicle is sagging on one side or in the front or the rear, the springs should be checked and replaced if necessary. Shock absorbers are filled with fluid and sealed during production. They are not refillable. If worn, damaged, or leaking, they must be replaced. A slight amount of fluid may bleed by the rod seal in cold weather and deposit a light film on the upper area of the shock absorber. This condition will not hurt the operation of the shock and should be considered normal. If noisy when driving, always check the tightness and condition of all shock absorber mounts. Replacement shock absorbers and/or struts should match the original equipment unit in physical size. Tech tip: the shock stud trick. Front shock absorbers used on many rear-wheel drive vehicles equipped with an SLA-type front suspension are often difficult to remove because the attaching nut is rusted to the upper shock stub. A common trick is to use a deep well 9/16 of an inch socket and a long extension and simply bend the shock stud until it breaks off. At first you would think that this method causes harm, and it does ruin the shock absorber, but the shock absorber is not going to be reused and will be discarded anyway. The usual procedure followed by many technicians is to simply take a minute or two to break off the upper shock stud, then hoist the vehicle to allow access to the lower two shock bolts, and then the shock can easily be removed. To install the replacement shock absorber, attach the lower bolts, lower the vehicle, and attach the upper rubber bushings and retaining nut. Front shock replacement. Front shock absorbers provide ride control and are usually attached to the lower control arm by bolts and nuts. The upper portion of the shock usually extends through the spring housing and is attached to the frame of the vehicle with rubber grommets to help insulate noise, vibration, and harshness. Most front shock absorbers can be replaced either with the vehicle still on the ground or while on a hoist. The front suspension of most vehicles allows the removal of the shocks without the need to support the downward travel of the lower control arm. The downward travel limit is stopped by a rubber stop or by the physical limit of the suspension arms. Special sockets and other tools are available to remove the nut from the shocks that use a single mounting stem. The removal of the lower mounting of most front shock absorbers usually involves the removal of two bolts. After removal of the attaching hardware, the shock absorber is simply pulled through the front control arm. See Figure 117-36. Reverse the removal procedure to install replacement shock absorbers. Always consult the manufacturer's recommended procedures and fastener tightening torque. Refer to Figure 117-36. Most shock absorbers used on the front suspension can be removed from underneath the vehicle after removing the attaching bolts or nuts. McPherson strut replacement. Caution: always follow the manufacturer's recommended methods and procedures whenever replacing a McPherson strut assembly or component. On most vehicles equipped with McPherson strut suspensions, strut replacement involves the following steps. Step 1. Hoist the vehicle, remove the wheels, and mark the attaching bolts or nuts. Step 2. Remove the upper strut mounting bolts except for one to hold the strut until ready to remove the strut assembly. See Figure 117-37. Step 3. Remove the brake caliper or brake hose from the strut housing. See Figure 117-38. Step 4. After removing all lower attaching bolts, remove the final upper strut bolt and remove the strut assembly from the vehicle. Place the strut assembly into a strut spring compressor fixture or use manual spring compressors as shown in Figure 117-39. Step 5. Compress the coil spring enough to relieve the tension on the strut rod nut. Remove the strut rod nut as shown in Figure 117-40. Step 6. After removing the strut rod nut, remove the upper strut bearing assembly and the spring. See Figure 117-41. Note: the bearing assembly should be carefully inspected and replaced if necessary. Some automotive experts recommend replacing the bearing assembly whenever the strut is replaced. Step 7. Many McPherson struts are replaced as an entire unit assembly. Other struts can have the cartridge inside the housing replaced. The cartridge is installed after removing the gland knot at the top of the strut tube and removing the original strut rod, valves, and hydraulic oil. Always replace the cartridge assembly per the manufacturer's recommended procedure. See Figures 117-42, 117-43, and 117-44. Step 8. Reinstall the strut in the vehicle. Caution: many GM front-wheel drive vehicles use a McPherson strut with a large diameter spring seat area. GM chassis engineers call this a cowcatcher design. If the coil spring breaks, the extra-large cowcatcher will prevent the end of the broken spring from moving outward where it could puncture a tire and possibly cause an accident. Always use a replacement strut that has this feature. Refer to Figure 117-37. Removing the upper strut mounting bolts. Some experts recommend leaving one of the upper strut mount nuts loosely attached to prevent the strut from falling when the lower attaching bolts are removed. Refer to Figure 117-38. A brake hydraulic hose is often attached to the strut housing. Sometimes all that is required to separate the line from the strut is to remove a spring clip. Refer to Figure 117-39. Use a strut spring compressor fixture to compress the spring on a McPherson strut before removing the strut retaining nut. Refer to Figure 117-40. Removing the strut rod nut. The strut shaft is being helped with one wrench while the nut is being removed with the other wrench. Notice that the spring is compressed before the nut is removed. Refer to Figure 117-41. Typical McPherson strut showing the various components. Refer to Figure 117-42. After installing the replacement strut cartridge, reinstall the spring and upper bearing assembly after compressing the spring. Notice that the strut is being held in a strut spring compressor fixture. Refer to Figure 117-43. Before final assembly, make sure the marks you made are aligned. Some struts are manufactured with marks to ensure proper reassembly. Refer to Figure 117-44. The strut on a modified McPherson strut assembly can be replaced by removing the upper mounting nuts. Stabilizer bar links and bushings. Diagnosis. Stabilizer bars twist whenever a vehicle turns a corner or whenever one side of the vehicle rises or lowers. The more the body of the vehicle leans, the more the bar twists, and the more the bar counteracts the roll of the body. A great deal of force is transferred from the stabilizer bar to the body or frame of the vehicle through the stabilizer links at the control arm and the stabilizer bar mounting bushings on the body or frame. The most common symptom of defective stabilizer bar links or bushings is noise while turning, especially over curbs. When driving up and over a curb at an angle, one wheel is pushed upward. Since the stabilizer bar connects both wheels, the bar tends to resist this motion by twisting. If one or both links are broken, a loud knock or clanking sound is heard as the bar contacts the control arm. Any sound heard when driving should be investigated and the cause determined by a thorough visual inspection. Refer to Figure 117-45. Stabilizer bar links should be replaced as a pair. Replacement. Stabilizer links are usually purchased as a kit consisting of replacement rubber bushings, retainers, a long bolt, and spacer with a nut and lock nut. General Motors recommends that stabilizer links be replaced in pairs and two kits purchased so that the links on both the left and the right can be replaced at the same time. See Figure 117-45. Stabilizer links are replaced by unbolting the old parts and installing replacement parts. Special precautions are usually not necessary, but, as always, consult a service manual for the exact recommended procedure and fastener torque. If the mounting bushings, also called isolator bushings, on the body or frame are worn or defective, a loud squeaking or knocking sound is usually heard. Stabilizer bar bushings often fail because the rubber has deteriorated from engine oil or other fluid leaks. Before replacing defective bushings, make certain that all other fluid leaks are stopped. Stabilizer bar bushing replacement involves the removal, unbolting, of the bushing retainers that surround the bushing and attach to the vehicle body or frame. The bushings are usually split so that they can be easily removed and replaced on the stabilizer bar and can slide into proper position. Reinstall the bushing retainer bolts and tighten to the specified torque. Strut rod bushings. Diagnosis. Strut rods are used on the front suspension of many front-wheel drive and rear-wheel drive vehicles. As with any rubber suspension component, strut rod bushings can deteriorate and crack. When strut rod bushings fail, the lower control arm can move forward and backward during braking or when hitting bumps in the road. Since the lower control arm position is important to vehicle control, when the bushing fails, a pulling or drifting of the vehicle often occurs. A common symptom of a defective strut rod bushing is noise and a pull toward one side while braking. Refer to Figure 117-46. A strut rod is viewed from the front of the vehicle. Refer to Figure 117-47. Typical strut rod bushing with rubber on both sides of the frame to help isolate noise, vibration, and harshness from being transferred to the passengers. Replacement. To replace a strut rod bushing, the nut on the end of the strut rod has to be removed. See Figure 117-46. As the nut is being removed, the lower control arm is likely to move forward or backward, depending on the location of the strut rod frame mount. After removing the strut rod nut, remove the one or two fasteners that retain the strut rod to the lower control arm. The strut rod can now be removed from the vehicle and the replacement rubber bushings can be installed. Install the strut rod in the reverse order of installation. Most bushings use a serrated spacer to maintain the proper force on the rubber bushings. This prevents the technician from compressing the rubber bushing when the strut rod nut is tightened. See Figure 117-47. Caution: some suspension bushings are directional and must be installed according to the vehicle manufacturer's instructions. For example, on some vehicles, the bushings have a slit or void which must face the front of the vehicle. Always check service information when installing new bushings. Refer to Figure 117-48. Notice that if the front coil springs are sagging, the resulting angle of the lower control arm causes the wheels to move from side to side as the suspension moves up and down. Note the difference between the distance at A with good springs and the distance at B with sagging springs. Front coil springs. Diagnosis: coil springs should be replaced in pairs if the vehicle ride height is lower than specifications. Sagging springs can cause the tires to slide laterally, side to side, across the pavement, causing excessive tire wear. See Figure 117-48. Sagging springs can also cause the vehicle to bottom out against the suspension bumpers when traveling over normal bumps and dips in the road. If a vehicle is overloaded, the springs of the vehicle can take a set and not recover to the proper ride height. This commonly occurs with all types of vehicles whenever a heavy load is carried, even on a short trip. It is normal for the rear of a vehicle to sag when a heavy load is carried, but it can permanently damage the spring by exceeding the yield point of the steel spring material. Replacement: the only solution recommended by the vehicle manufacturer is to replace the damaged springs in pairs, both front and both rear, or all four. Several aftermarket alternatives include the following: helper or auxiliary left springs. These helper springs are usually designed to increase the load carrying capacity of leaf springs or to restore the original ride height to sagging springs. Spring inserts for coil springs. Hard rubber or metal spacers are not recommended because they create concentrated pressure points on the coils that can cause the spring to break. Hard rubber stabilizers that bridge the gap between two coils without raising the ride height stiffen the ride by locking two coils together. With two coils connected, the spring rate increases and the spring becomes stiffer. Air shocks or airbag devices. Air shocks or airbags are generally used to restore or increase the load carrying capacity to the rear of the vehicle. While these devices do allow the ride height to be maintained, the extra load is still being supported by the tires and rear axle bearings. Caution should be used not to overload the basic chassis or powertrain of the vehicle. There are two designs for vehicles that use coil springs. The most commonly used design places the coil spring between the vehicle frame and the lower control arm. Both front suspension designs require that the front shock absorbers be removed in order to replace the coil springs. This first step in the coil spring removal procedure can be performed on the ground or on any type of hoist. After removing the shock absorber, use a coil spring compressor and install it through the center of the coil spring. See Figure 117-49. Hook the arms of the coil spring compressor over the rungs of the coil spring and rotate the adjusting nut on the spring compressor with a wrench to shorten the spring. Coil spring clips can also be used to retain the coil spring. Caution: when compressed, all springs contain a great deal of stored energy. If a compressed spring were to become disconnected from its spring compressor or clips, it could be projected outward with enough force to cause injury or death. After the coil spring is retained, the control arm can be separated from the steering knuckle and the coil spring can be removed as shown in Figures 117-50 and 117-51. Replacement springs should be compressed and installed using the reverse procedure. Note: many automotive experts recommend that new coil insulators be installed every time the coil springs are replaced. Make sure that the spring is positioned correctly in the control arm and that the spring insulators are installed correctly. See Figure 117-52. Most control arms use two holes for the purpose of coil spring seating. The end of the spring should cover one hole completely and partially cover the second hole. See Figure 117-53. Refer to Figure 117-49. A spring compressor is required by most vehicle manufacturers to be used whenever disassembling a coil spring. Suspension system. Refer to Figure 117-50. The steering knuckle has been disconnected from the lower ball joint. The lower control arm and the coil spring are being held up by a floor jack. Case study. The rock hard problem. The owner of a 6-month-old full-size pickup truck complained that occasionally when the truck was driven up into a driveway, a loud grinding sound was heard. Several service technicians worked on the truck, trying to find the cause for the noise. After the left front shock absorber was replaced, the noise did not occur for 2 weeks and then started again. Finally, the service manager told the technician to replace anything and everything in the front suspension in an attempt to solve the customer's intermittent problem. 5 minutes later, a technician handed the service manager a small, deformed rock. This technician had taken a few minutes to carefully inspect the entire front suspension. Around the bottom coil spring seat, the technician found the rock. Apparently, when the truck made a turnover a bump, the rock was forced between the coils of the coil spring, making a very loud grinding noise. But the rock did not always get between the coils. Therefore, the problem occurred only once in a while. The technician handed the rock to the very happy customer. The summary. The complaint: vehicle owner complained of loud grinding sound from the front suspension at times. The cause: a rock was found at the bottom of the coil spring seat. The correction: the rock was removed. Refer to Figure 117-51. A rubber mallet is being used to support the upper control arm as the lower control is being lowered using a floor jack. After all of the tension has been removed from the coil spring, it can be removed and the replacement installed. Refer to Figure 117-52. Spring insulators are installed between the spring seat and the coil spring to reduce noise. Figure 117-53. The holes in the lower arm are not only used to allow water to drain from the spring seat, but also used as a gauge to show the service technician that the coil spring is correctly seated. 1433. Refer to Figure 117-54. By rotating the adjusting bolt, the vehicle can be raised or lowered. Steering knuckles. Diagnosis. Most steering knuckles are constructed of cast or forged cast iron. The steering knuckle usually incorporates the wheel spindle and steering arm. The steering knuckle / steering arm can become bent if the vehicle is in an accident or hits a curb sideways. Often this type of damage is not apparent until vehicle handling or excessive tire wear is noticed. Unless a thorough inspection is performed during a wheel alignment, a bent steering knuckle is often overlooked. Replacement. If the steering knuckle is bent or damaged, it must be replaced. It should not be bent back into shape or repaired. To replace the steering knuckle, both ball joints must be disconnected from the knuckle and the brake components removed. Be sure to support the control arm and spring properly during the procedure. See a factory service manual for the exact procedure and fastener torque for the vehicle you are servicing. Torsion bars. Adjustment. Most torsion bar suspensions are designed with an adjustable bolt to permit the tension on the torsion bar to be increased or decreased to change the ride height. An equal side-to-side ride height can be corrected by adjusting, or turning, the torsion bar tension bolt. See Figure 117-54. Torsion bar adjustment should be made if the difference in ride height from one side to another exceeds 1/8 of an inch, or 0.125 inch or 3.2 millimeters. If the ride height difference side to side is greater than 1/8 of an inch, the vehicle will tend to wander or be unstable, with constant steering wheel movements required to maintain a straight ahead direction. Note: torsion bars should never be switched from one side of the vehicle to the other as they are twisted and work hardened in one direction and can break if installed on the opposite side of the vehicle. Figure 117-55. An adapter and a press or large clamp are used to remove the old bushing from the control arm and to install a new bushing. Control arm bushings. Diagnosis. Defective control arm bushings are a common source of vehicle handling and suspension noise problems. Most suspension control arm bushings are constructed of three parts: an inner metal sleeve, the rubber bushing itself, and an outer steel sleeve. Some vehicles use a two-piece bushing that does not use an outer sleeve. Replacement. To remove an old bushing from a control arm, the control arm must first be separated from the suspension and/or frame of the vehicle. Several methods can be used to remove the bushing from the control arm, but all methods apply force to the outer sleeve. While an air chisel is frequently used to force the steel sleeve out of the suspension member, a puller tool is most often recommended by General Motors. See Figure 117-55. The puller can be used to remove the old bushing and install the replacement bushing without harming the control arm or the new bushing. All bushings should be tightened with the vehicle on the ground and the wheels in a straight ahead position. This prevents the rubber bushing from exerting a pulling force on the suspension. Note: some replacement control arm bushings have a higher durometer, or hardness, rating than the original. Urethane bushings are often used in sporty or race-type vehicles and deflect less than standard replacement bushings. These harder bushings also transfer more road noise, vibration, and harshness to the body. The upper control arm bushings can be replaced in most vehicles that use a short long arm type suspension by following just four easy steps. Step 1. Raise the vehicle and support the lower control arm with a safety stand or floor jack. Step 2. Disconnect the upper control arm from the frame by removing the frame attaching nuts or bolts. Step 3. Using the upper ball joint as a pivot, rotate the upper control arm outward into the wheel well area. With the control arm accessible, it is much easier to remove and replace the upper control arm pivot shaft and rubber bushings. And Step 4. After replacing the bushings, simply rotate the upper control arm back into location and reattach the upper control arm pivot shaft to the vehicle frame. Note: an alignment should always be performed after making any suspension-related repairs. Strut replacement. Step by step. Step 1. The tools needed to replace a front strut assembly include several sockets and a ball peen hammer, plus a strut compressor. Step 2. After safely hoisting the vehicle to elbow height and removing the wheel covers, remove the front tire/wheel assembly. Step 3. Remove the two strut retaining nuts. Step 4. Before using a hammer to drive the retaining bolts from the steering knuckle, thread the nut into the bolt backwards to prevent causing damage to the threads. Step 5. Remove the retaining bolts and separate the strut from the steering knuckle. Step 6. Lower the vehicle and remove the upper strut retaining fasteners. Step 7. Hold the strut while removing the last upper retaining nut and then remove the strut assembly. Step 8. After the strut has been removed from the vehicle, install the assembly into a strut compressor. Step 9. Position the jaws of the compressor under the bearing assembly as per the vehicle manufacturer's instructions. Step 10. Turn the compressor wheel until all tension of the spring has been relieved from the upper bearing assembly. Step 11. Remove the strut retaining nut. Step 12. Remove the strut assembly. Step 13. Before installing the replacement strut, check the upper bearing by exerting a downward force on the bearing while rotating and check for roughness. Replace if necessary. Step 14. Install the strut from underneath the spring compressor fixture. Step 15. Install the strut retaining nut. Most vehicle manufacturers specify that the strut retaining nut be replaced and the old one discarded. Step 16. Before loosening the tension, check that the coil spring is correctly located at both the top and the bottom, then release the tension on the spring. Step 17. Remove the strut assembly from the compressor and back of the vehicle and install the upper fasteners. Do not torque to specifications until the lower fasteners have been installed. Step 18. Attach the lower strut to the steering knuckle using the original hardened bolts and nuts. Step 19. Using a torque wrench, torque all fasteners to factory specifications. And Step 20. Install the tire wheel assembly, lower the vehicle, and torque the lug nuts to factory specifications. Align the vehicle before returning it to the customer. Review questions. Question 1. How should a proper road test be performed to diagnosis of suspension-related problems? Question 2. What are four symptoms of worn or defective shock absorbers? Question 3. What is the procedure for replacing front shock absorbers on an SLA-type suspension vehicle? Question 4. What is the testing procedure for ball joints? Question 5. How should tapered suspension components be removed? Chapter Quiz. Question 1. A disadvantage of a solid front axle on a vehicle is A. The wheels cannot be turned. B. Lack of ride quality. C. Poor load capacity. D. All of these. Question 2. A vehicle is equipped with ASLA front suspension. What do the letters mean? A. Single long arm. B. Side lateral angle. C. Short long arm. D. Solid link assembly. Question 3. Unusual noise during a test drive can be caused by A. Defective wheel bearings or stabilizer bar links. B. Defective or worn control arm bushings or ball joints. C. Worn or defective CV joints. D. All of the above. Question 4. A noise and a pull toward one side during braking is a common symptom of a worn or defective A. shock absorber. B. Strut rod bushing. C. Stabilizer bar link. D. Track rod bushing. Question 5. Two technicians are discussing non-indicator type ball joint. Inspection. Technician A says that the vehicle should be on the ground with the ball joints loaded, then checked for free play. Technician B says that the ball joints should be unloaded before checking for free play. Which technician is correct? A. Technician A only. B. Technician B only. C. Both technicians A and B. D. Neither a technician A nor B. Question 6. Most manufacturers specify a maximum axial play for ball joints of about A. 0.003 of an inch, or 0.076 millimeters. B. 0.010 of an inch, or 0.25 millimeters. C. 0.030 of an inch, or 0.76 millimeters. D. 0.050 of an inch, or 1.27 millimeters. Question 7. A light film of oil is observed on the upper area of a shock absorber. Technician A says that this condition should be considered normal. Technician B says that a rod seal may bleed fluid during cold weather, causing the oil film. Which technician is correct? A. Technician A only. B. Technician B only. C. Both technicians A and B. D. Neither a technician A nor B. Question 8. Before the strut insert can be removed from a typical McPherson strut assembly, which operation is necessary to prevent possible personal injury? A. The brake caliper and/or brake hose should be removed from the strut housing. B. The coil spring should be compressed. C. The upper strut mounting bolts should be removed. D. The lower attaching bolts should be removed. Question 9. What should the technician do when replacing stabilizer bar links? A. The stabilizer bar should be removed from the vehicle before replacing the links. B. The links can be replaced individually, yet the manufacturer often recommends that the links at both ends be replaced together. C. The stabilizer bar must be compressed using a special tool before removing or installing stabilizer bar links. D. Both B and C are correct. Question 10. Two technicians are discussing suspension bushings. Technician A says that replacing control arm bushings usually requires special tools. Technician B says, using high-performance urethane bushings may cause excessive noise to be transferred to the passenger compartment. Which technician is correct? A. Technician A only. B. Technician B only. C. Both technicians A and B. D. Neither a technician A nor B. End of chapter 117.